Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 76 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me, as always, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, of course, being the first week of Mythic, is officially the start of the race to World First for Sanctum of Domination. And we're going to be talking about the raid and the race and some of the other changes that went in this week and just kind of like nerding out over our part of the game. I also think looks kind of like Anom's got the race on in the background there. Yeah.
If you're watching live,
nice.
Got Limit on in the background. So
nice. So we'll know if they kill it.
We will. You'll hear it here probably second. You're probably watching the mainstream anyway. So when you watch the audio or listen to the audio version of this, you'll get to relive it again. So
So before we get into Race to World First stuff, though, we have a few hot fixes from this week that we want to get through before we really launch into the main topic.
Yeah. So just a handful of hot fixes. So not as crazy as it was last week. Maybe as crazy. A lot of the hot fixes were to bosses, so we'll talk about those probably more when we talk about the actual race and what we've seen. But outside of Sanctum and some of the other things that happened, there were a handful of other sort of tuning changes. A couple of ones are actually pretty big. So first up is coming to 9.1, there was a really big hot fix to two of the lieutenants in Mythic Plus. The fire guy, which I forget, it's Siderator or something or other. Yep, his Melt Soul, which is a debuff he places on two targets randomly, which normally increases fire damage taken by 100%, was halved. So now it's only increases fire damage taken by 50%.
Yep.
So a little less deadly there. But actually the bigger one is to Oros Coldheart, which was the Frost Guy. And basically the debuff he puts on one player, which sort of puts a circle around them and they take massive amounts of damage. They no longer take massive amounts of damage.
Well, they take less massive amounts. It's a, 25% nerf?
Yeah, which is, this is, I think, the second iteration of nerfs for this ability after its initial placement on PTR. So before it was like, if you're a healer and you heal anyone else other than the person with the debuff, the person with the debuff dies. So then they made it so like, well, you can maybe heal every other global can be put into someone
like who doesn't have the debuff.
Yeah, like the tank. and now with this recent nerf, I mean, I will tell you, I've run probably 6 or 7 Mythic Pluses already this week, all around the 15 or so range. So nothing super high, but it felt much like, honestly, there are certain pulls where I would ignore the person with the debuff just because of the class they were like. And if they have defensive up, it's pretty easy. So the only interesting thing I noticed about the debuff, and I don't know if it was a range thing or just a like targeting thing, but whoever gets the debuff the first time generally got every debuff after that. And I distinctly remember, like, regardless of who it was, it was mostly like I ran with a couple warlocks. So like if the warlock got it, the first debuff, they would always get the ones after that. And then, if it was on, a different sort of range class, I ran with like a Boomkin, they got all of them once. So it was a little bit weird there. It didn't really seem to jump around, but no melee got it, which I'm happy with.
Yeah.
I don't have to dodge around. So, just a couple of hot fixes there to some of the Mythic Plus lieutenants. Nothing I noticed in the dungeons themselves. So it was really just these couple of nerfs.
Yeah, I think at this point, a lot of the base like 9.0 dungeons are actually in a pretty good state. You know, been doing a bunch of keys to gear up this week and last, and I don't think, even being tyrannical. What was it? Tyrannical last week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There weren't any bosses that I noticed like being super outliers, at least at the 15 range. I definitely felt the scaling changes from the patch this week in Fortified, tanking it. That's some real spooky stuff still, but we get another 15 island levels and it'll even out. So
it'll sort of even out there. So but Mythic Plus seemed pretty easy. I think the biggest thing to your point is this is scaling. That stuff seemed to take a little bit longer than it has in the past, but that's just because I think people are slightly undergeared for the 15s that they're doing. So, so then next up we have a couple of hot fixes to two things, basically to Tazavesh, which is the new Mega Dungeon,
yep,
and then to one of the Shards of Domination. So we'll go over the Tides of Eshnir first. This is to the, I believe it's the third boss you do. It's the Mailroom boss, basically.
Depends on the order, but yes. I think the typical order has it third. Actually, regardless of which way you go, you either do the Menagerie first or you do the Band boss first.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he's, male guy's in the middle, and then you would cross either way from there to do the sub boss. But yeah, he's one of the, I guess, he's actually, could be the second if you ran right to him. But yeah, so in his hard mode encounter, which was where this bug, I think, mostly presented itself, was the little bombs that he puts on the ground. You basically, in normal mode, or I guess non-hard mode, one person can pick it up, run it to the chute, throw it in the chute, and you're fine. It won't explode and do damage. The problem was in hard mode, whenever you pick one of those up, you can't move. So essentially you have to make like a daisy chain and throw it to a person who eventually can throw it in the chute and get rid of it. The bug was, though, that as soon as you threw it, it acted like you dropped it and exploded immediately on the group. So the strategy to do hard mode mailroom was essentially to not move, put everyone in one spot, and do enough damage so that you killed the boss before it killed you.
Which, even with like relatively scuffed groups, you just bloodlust and hit all of your CDs, and we didn't have any issues. Like, this is in Castle Nathria gear still for the most part during this last week. Yeah. We didn't have any real issues doing that. They actually don't have that much health, so this is still probably the easiest strategy for doing the boss. Like, I don't think you actually want to do this mechanic, even with the fix. If you're going in and you're like primarily, 215, 210 gear, then you probably do need to do this because I don't think you're going to be able to kill it. But if you're like around Mythic Castle Nathria eye levels, then you can just press Bloodlust and go to town.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's how we killed it last week. That's how we killed it this week. So this week was noticeably easier. I think last week we had like two bombs go off before we killed it. So it was a little sketchy at the end. But yeah, mostly it was, yeah. It was a good, I mean, it's a good change. Now you can do the fight you're supposed to
with
the way you're supposed to. But if you're doing hard mode, there's no point in actually doing it the way you're supposed to. So
yeah.
So that's the mailroom update there. Then they also did do a hotfix to Shard of Zed, one of the domination shards. So Shard of Zed, if you're not familiar, because I actually just looked this up, so I was saying the right thing. This is the one where anytime you use an ability, you can put a aura on either you or a friendly target that basically allows them to drain health from any enemies around them. And the problem with this ability was that it was proccing from everything.
Including invisibility potions.
Yeah, you could proc it during invisibility potions, which means you ran over mobs while invisible, the aura would trigger and then pull you out of invisibility. You could proc it while you were mouncing. You could proc it from casting a fishing pole or casting fishing, basically proc from anything. What they did was they made a change that now only allows it to proc from class abilities, basically removing it proccing from like items or, other things that aren't like just spells and damage abilities.
So. I've heard it's still not perfect because there are things like specifically for rogues where it might proc off of sprint. So if you press stealth and then shroud and then press sprint, you might get the buff. So it's not perfect, but it's much improved.
For sure. So that's a pretty updated change. I know that's super annoying. They've had some other things too like this, where things would proc randomly. I think one of the essences used to do this, right? Back in BFA. So
there was definitely stuff. So the tank miner essence null barrier, you could, if you took magic damage prior to going into invisibility, then the barrier would explode when it expired break you out of stealth if it hit anything. And you can't cancel that buff because they wanted to keep people from cheesing it. So you actually couldn't like cancel it early as part of an invisibility macro or anything. You just had to wait for it to explode.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Good times.
Love that. All right. So those are sort of, I think, the at least in-game updates, changes that have been made. But we have a couple more last week things before we start talking about the race specifically. First up, we have an interesting tweet, which probably sort of bleeds into the race for world first discussion, but
yeah,
it does come. We'll talk about it just briefly, and we can sort of bring this up maybe further down, but it comes from Perfecto, which he is a rogue on Echo's team. And essentially he tweeted out that he should probably, or that he doesn't know why he traveled to Switzerland to be with the team, because he's not gonna be able to play. Not because he's sick or anything happened. It's just that he didn't get his three set shard set from the domination gem. So he didn't get three gems of the same set, which essentially to, you know, the folks at the level that Echo, you know, Limit, even the other, you know, top 10 world guilds are doing, basically means you can't play. You just don't do enough damage for what they need.
For context on where, like, why this is suddenly a problem where it wasn't really one that we talked about during PTR. On PTR, and even now, like, the rank one of the set bonus is fairly impactful, but it's something where, like, it's like any other form of gear luck, right? If you get unlucky with gear, you're going to do less damage. You get better trinkets, you're going to do more damage. It was on par with that kind of regular old gear luck. Then they added four more ranks of the set bonus. So currently I have rank... I was very lucky. I got my blood set finished this week. And rank three of that is doing 12% of my damage.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. They're just so strong.
It's incredible. Let me actually pull up what the actual, like, DPS number is, because it's something ludicrous. Yeah. It's not just like, oh, lol, tanks do no damage. It's actually doing just huge quantities of damage. And this isn't even the good one for most DPS, right? Like, if you're a rogue, you want the unholy one. So Bloodlink was doing 560 DPS. By itself. And that's not counting, like, the proc effects from the gems themselves. That's just the set bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, which, I mean, from my point of view, I think it sucks for Perfecto, like, or for really for anybody who, like, sort of raids at this level and you're at the mercy of RNG, right, in terms of, like, getting the items that you need to move forward. But, like, this is no different than, like, any other sort of, like, loot luck, right? Like, we've had these sort of conversations before about, like, or these sort of tweets before about how, like, I've killed this boss 12 times and 14 different splits and didn't get the gear I needed. It's like, well, like, the other option here is to just put everything on a vendor and you buy it, right? And, like, I think that gets at the core of, like, an RPG mechanic. Like, I don't have a problem with this. And I think it's sort of a, like, complaining about a core mechanic of an RPG. I think
it's an issue of scale more than anything else. Like, to use Corruption as an example, Corruption acquisition wouldn't have been a problem if it were very easy and even expected to have a bunch of small incremental upgrades over a period of weeks, right? Like, It was the issue with Corruption primarily, as far as acquisition went, is that the combination of the randomness and the fact that some of them were hugely, massively valuable, like, on par with the set bonuses by themselves, that made it really frustrating. And So this is, again, a problem of scale. Like, if these did less damage to the point that, like, you know, if you got your good trinket instead, or you got better luck on weapons instead, you know, then if it were competitive with that, then I don't think people would really be complaining like this. It's the fact that these set bonuses are so overwhelmingly powerful compared to any other avenue of gear. So even if you do get lucky somewhere else, like, there's people in my guild that had good luck on trinkets that already have their best trinkets for the tier, but they are looking at probably several more weeks to get their unholy set because they just have no sockets or one socket and plus the rep one, but they have to get their set one and they have to get, you know, one or two more unholy gems and things like that. Because that's so impactful, it feels bad to have lost on that RNG, even though they won, you know, the trinket lottery.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think my only counterpoint to that is that, like, the other option is that the set bonuses are not impactful at all. Right. Or they're like mediocre increases in power. And then you feel like it feels less like a system that matters, right? Like, I'd rather them overtune at least the sets themselves, make them something you want, versus undertune them, which is what conduits are, right?
Like, yeah, okay.
Like, that's the idea. It's like, there's not...
There's a balance, though, right? Because, like, I think...
this, I agree there's a balance.
This set bonus is better than my legendary. Like, it is straight up better by a large margin than my legendary.
Right, but the other option was that the set bonuses are less powerful and you don't care about. Like, that's what I'm saying is I'd rather, if Blizzard was going to eke on either side of the, here's your balance line, and they can either be under or overtuned, I'd rather them lean towards overtuning so they matter. Like, so they're
I would rather them lean towards undertuning them, because when you have this kind of very, for one thing, it's time-gated access, because you only get 10, you get 10 shots at looting gems each week. You can get one gem per boss for the most part. And there are 10 boss kills regardless of difficulty, so you can get, you got 10 shots. You need to get three specific gems. You need to get one specific item to turn on the set, plus two more items, one of which you can get for a rep vendor. So it's not really that bad. But you, there's like a bunch of hoops to jump through. And it's the level of impact they have right now, this feels like corruption.
I'm getting rank ones
because I have the blood set and other people don't.
but my only point, the biggest difference I think from the corruption piece, right, was the acquisition of gear here is very finite, meaning once you get the helm, you're fine. Yes. Once you get three sockets, you're fine. Once you get the gems, you are fine.
Right.
The problem with corruption was you not only needed to get the item, but then you needed to get the specific corruption rolled on that item.
Yeah.
Right. So like, or you ended up in your case, right, where you're wearing like world quest level bracers because they have CD
for
on
the
them,
entire tier. That kill, was fantastic.
Kill those off, right?
I still have those in and my so bank.
Like, where I think that individual power, I think, is a problem.
Yes,
but
I agree with that.
You have a set that you need to together, and it's not like they're asking you to like, you need to get the helm at this level.
Kind of what I'm saying is like, this feels like corruption because we are once again in the world of the haves and the have-nots, right? This isn't something like in patch 9.0, you got to pick your covenant. You had great control over your legendary as long as you were doing your weekly stuff. You got that huge power bonus from getting your legendary upgrades. There were other large power bonuses like trinkets, which I have definitely complained about before. But generally speaking, the difference between the best and the second best trinket, or even the fifth best trinket, is not, you know, 10% DPS. It's like 2% DPS, right? Whereas right now, you know, going from zero to doing 12% more DPS, or as I had on our best eye poll, 15% more DPS because I had the blood set. That's just like, there is this feeling of like the haves versus the have-nots.
My only observation there is basically like, you're only a have-not until you get the item, right? Like, you're not always going to be a have-not. Where in the case of corruption, you could always have been a have-not.
Oh, yeah. That's
until they put the vendor there.
I'm not like, I guess corruption maybe puts this on a, makes it, corruption is definitely worse. Like, I want to be clear on that. Corruption is so much worse than this, but there are parallels. And there are things to understand, in my opinion, about this system that are the same kind of feels bads from corruption, right? It felt bad to get unlucky on corruption and be one of the have-nots. In the same way that right now, it feels bad to be one of the have-nots. And in my guild, in 2 weeks, everybody's going to have their set bonus pretty much regardless. And I think that's where, like, right now, this system feels bad, and I think they could have designed it in a way where it wouldn't have, but in 2 weeks it's not going to matter.
And I don't know if it does, because like if you look back at even like tier sets, right, and the acquisition there, like you would have had a similar situation where you would have had people
these are
who
more
got
powerful than
set.
Any tier sets,
well, like, but I mean regardless of the power level, right, like the
power level matters though.
I don't think it does in terms of acquisition, and I think you can break those two concepts
up. No, I don't think you can, because, like, okay, let's take mounts, for example. There are some extremely difficult to get mounts, right? But they don't contribute to power. I don't care about them. Like, there are people that care about them, but they don't contribute to power, so I don't care.
But I think So what I mean by the acquisition piece, right, and breaking up from the power of it, is that we wouldn't be talking about this. So I agree, the power matters, but we wouldn't be talking about this in terms of have and have nots if the actual power increase was minor at best.
Yeah, exactly.
And at that point, the system wouldn't matter.
Yeah,
I think like, no, it wouldn't. Well, I mean, it'd be like conduits. Like, it'd be like, oh, great, I have a 226 conduit.
Okay. That's kind of, that's extreme, right? That's extreme. But conduits are extremely undertuned. Like, there's a big gap, and something like Bloodlink, I think, is a great example, because it's very easy to do the math on Bloodlink and see how much damage it does.
Right.
You don't. There's
right, but I. So I mean, I don't want to go like my biggest point is that regardless of their power, I think the acquisition of them is fine. That's my only thing is that I think the fact that you have to go through this idea of like randomly pulling these things out mm-hmm. as a in course of just playing an RPG game, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that it's not gated behind, like the reason that I think, again, corruption, I agree, is probably a good analogy system. Like the reason corruption was bad was because the acquisition was bad. Like the fact that they were powerful, that you could wear a 184 whatever item, right? And wear it for most of expansion, that's a broken system from a power side of things. Yeah. But I think the acquisition side sucks because you couldn't ever upgrade that, right?
Yeah.
Like, or you could never get better than that. And I think the idea here is that there's a finite amount of gear you need to essentially get or pull or yeah. you know, pull the slot machine enough and you'll get it, right? Where with the corruption side of things, you could go.
Yeah, you would never. You could realistically, never you were that, never right? getting your bits from random drops. Like there was right. the one guy, do you remember that armory link that was going around of the guy that had like 8 different gushing wounds on back before they nerfed it? Because gushing wounds was balanced around it being rare.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was that. And then like there's still the other side of it, other side of like the RNG side of things, which is like you have Titan Forging and War Forging, which aren't at the same level this, but they're very similar where like you could go an entire expansion and always be slightly less powerful than everybody else because
yeah.
you couldn't get a Titan Forge pair of gloves or whatever it ended up being.
I think
that's what I'm saying is like my point is that from an acquisition perspective, I think it's fine. Like I didn't make a set today. I've gotten 5 gems and 1 gem socket, and the gem socket I did get was off of the time walking vendor. Box. Oh, no, okay. the time walking box. I guess I get the vendor too. So I guess yeah. I have 2. But like, and gem wise, I've gotten nothing. I've gotten 1 unholy gem, 1 bad frost gem, and 2 blood gems.
Yeah.
So it's like from my perspective, I'd probably be one of the more vocal people, or should be, right? Just based on the fact that like I didn't get none of the gem sets I wanted. I got shoulders with my Dom stock, which I don't even want. Like I'd rather have helm because I need yeah. to activate unholy. Yeah. But for me, I'm fine with that level of RNG being in the game because I know that I will eventually be done. I'll yeah. eventually be done when I get my mythic helm. I'll be done when I get my second or when I get all my Dom stock and gear from a mythic level perspective.
Yeah.
And I'll be done when I acquire all the gems, which maybe takes me 2 weeks. So like this whole like that's why Perfecto's tweet, like it's fine if you're at the top world, but like anybody who isn't raiding in one of the top 10 guilds right now.
Yeah,
like you're complaining about playing an RPG, which if you don't want to play an RPG, go play like a game where they have a cash shop where you can buy all the cosmetics you want, you can look good, and all the guns shoot the same, or whatever you like, all the balls shoot, the same, whatever it ends up being, right?
That's only my point. So the acquisition is better than corruption, but worse than tier sets.
Well, because you had to acquire 2 things versus 1.
Well, like, no, tier sets you need 4 things. Like you need to get 4 pieces out of 6 in order to get your 4 set turned on.
Right, but from a gem perspective, you need 2 separate acquisition sources, right, for gems. You need to actually get the gem, and you need to get the
piece to put the gem. So the reason, it's not about number of things for me, it's actually about the incremental nature of it, right? The sets here are very binary. You either have it or you don't. And there's a lot of things that you can get to drop that don't actually contribute towards that goal. Like there's, you know, pieces of the system that you can have drop for you that actually do nothing. Things like getting frost gems. You know, frost gems, there's the absorb one that's very good and the others are worthless. And corruption had that same kind of thing where there's corrupt, you would get, you know, your new corrupted piece and it would be worthless because it was movement speed, you know, or whatever. Versus like a tier set where if you get a tier piece, it's always a tier piece. It's always inching you towards that, you know, set bonus. And you only need to get, you know, you need to get the tier piece, a tier piece, and then you're done, you know, and then you can work on like getting the right 4 pieces, but every piece that you get contributes towards that goal of getting your tier set together versus this where like, you know, you kill a boss and you see the loot pop up and you get excited and then it's a frost gem and you go, God damn it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would agree that if we're strictly comparing it to tier sets, I think the acquisition there much better from a tier set perspective. But I don't think this system comes close, like isn't as good as that. My point is that like people complaining about the acquisition part of it just seems like they just, and I'm not saying this is you, this is sort of probably bucketizing people and generalizing when I shouldn't, but the idea is like you're complaining about playing an RPG that has random loot drops. Like it's just like it's part of the way the game plays, and like I have no, like I have less of an issue there. And I'm fine with them being powerful, because like it's fun to eventually get them and like see your power level increase. Like it's maybe like viewing it from someone who like you, like you've gotten it already, so you get to see that increase immediately first, right? But like eventually every player gets to have the moment you had, which was like, quit my third gem, do 12% more damage, this is awesome. Like every player gets to have that moment, versus if it's like Corruption, or you know what I mean, if it was like Corruption, not every player got to have that moment, or if they did, it was like, buy, oh, I went BOE. To the vendor and grab, and like either I bought a BOE or I went to the vendor and, you know, did horrific visions, like killed, like bled my through my eyes enough in horrific vision so that I could then buy the item and like attach it to some piece I had, right?
Yeah,
which is like which is less exciting. Like it's just, that's just like not
absolutely
fun at all,
absolutely agree on that point.
Yeah, but I mean, like from my perspective, cool that they're powerful, cool that they have incremental power, right? That now that there's a reason to upgrade gems beyond rank one. So
I actually think that, I never thought I would say this, but I actually think that it should have taken more time to rank up your gems. Because now
it's super cheap.
It's so cheap. As soon as I got my three pieces, I went to the vendor and I was shocked at the prices. I hadn't looked at them yet. I was able to go immediately to rank three. Go from zero to rank three just on the spot and get partway through rank four, like partway to rank four. Like in, so the costs are exponentially increasing. So like next week I should be able to get rank four, I believe. And then 2 weeks later I'll get rank five. So it's like another month of drops almost to get rank five. But rank three is literally twice as good as rank one.
Yeah, it's a lot of initial power increase, which, yeah, I agree. I mean, when I looked at the prices too, because I was like, well, I should hold on to these embers and save them for Unholy, and, you know, I'll wait to see what gems I get. But I was like, it's five for the first upgrade? Like, just upgrade everything to rank two. That way, at least I'll have rank two everything. And like, it's just pricing-wise, I think they missed the mark there. But yeah, I mean, sorry, I know we've sort of gone out of tangent how good the Sanctum of Domination gem system is. But I think to Perfecto's point, I feel for the guy. I feel like you basically spend a bunch of time setting up, getting ready for this like world first thing to like go with your team and do stuff first. And you basically get screwed by the drop lords, right? By the, by sort of,
and
like
this is something
that
like
side of the equation.
I do think that this is a legitimate like complaint and problem that could have been avoided if they had designed the system such that the power gain were smoother. You know, if being lucky and unlucky was a couple percent, and like it can still end up being, you know, a 15% damage increase in a month, you know.
Right. Yeah.
It just doesn't need to be for the average case for someone to go from literally zero to 15% damage increase because they got that one final piece, like that binary thing of either having all the pieces or not having all the pieces, I think is ultimately the problem.
No, and I'd agree there. I think the initial power boost was probably slightly too high. Yeah, I'd agree to that. And then smooth it out. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right, cool. Well, sorry, Perfecto, that you're riding the bench, my dude. But it looks like your guild's doing okay though. It's a close race. So
it is an extremely close race.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about it in a second. So we have one more thing, and then we'll actually get to talk about the race and some of the bosses. And that is the Race for World First View on Warcraft Logs. Which is a new tool. So like basically I think all the major sites, there's two of them, Raider.io and Warcraft Logs, basically went a little bit all out for this. Warcraft Logs, if you remember previously, added a competition mode, which didn't let you view guilds logs, but like some of the top guilds, because they do private log, they allowed Warcraft Logs to basically show their best percentage on bosses. So you could see like as guilds kill bosses, like Warcraft Logs would update their top 10. And then they'd show like the best percentage on either a certain boss or just in general how the top 10 are doing, where they're at. What they've since enhanced that with is what they're calling sort of a head-to-head, or like, I don't even know they have a name for it. I guess they're calling it the head-to-head mode, which is where you can view a certain encounter and basically see the streams of two guilds that are progressing on it. So I think you're showing the Sylvanas encounter right now, which is of course Echo and Limit. And you can sort of click around on, they'll show like their roster, who's all in, and you can, and I think any of the ones with a red dot here, if you're watching this live.
You can,
if not, you can sort of click to different viewpoints. It'll seamlessly switch between them.
You don't even so need if you're a healer and you want to watch a healer POV, you can go here and, you know, click on Draenei or whoever and watch their POV, which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, and it works with pretty much any encounter. I think you said it even goes down to like the server level, right? Where you can
watch, like, so there's this overall Race the World first view that shows, you know, everybody progressing in the top 10 range, and where they are in the instance and information about their pull counts and what their best pull is and all that kind of stuff. So that's very cool. It does also, so if I go to this is you, so if I go to my realm, there's a realm first equivalent of that view basically that shows the different guilds. I don't know why this is showing to Nathrius for our guild, but you know, you can see where people are even if they do private log like Astral does.
Yeah, so it is a very cool, wow, yeah, nice to sire kill. But it is a very cool view just in terms of like being able to view the race, I think, in a different way. So if you want to see like two guilds head to head, or, you know, I think at the start of the race, I don't think this was fully up and running right when they kicked off.
But I think so they did have some upgrades to it during the race, but also I didn't know about the head to head thing because you have to select a specific boss. So like right now when you go there, it defaults to Sylvanas because there's four different guilds progressing Sylvanas. But previously it actually showed the overall view, like the progress bar throughout the raid and everybody's whole percentages. But now this is actually a very, very cool way of like taking a quick peek and going like, oh, I want to watch a tank POV. Let me, you know, click now stream.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, they did. It is a very, very cool, sort of way to view the race. I think, I mean, to be fair, like Warcraft Log sort of positioned probably the best to do this.
Oh yeah.
In terms of just like what they have going for them, but yeah. Super cool. I thought even previously being able to see like how close different guilds were, you know, without seeing their logs, but, you know, letting that, you know, detail be public was cool. So one more step now. Yeah. I can sort of click around and they even like have like Max's and Scripe's POVs as like the coaches and stuff like that. So it's
really very nice. Cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I think let's transition into talking about the Race for World first. Yeah. So, I don't know where you want to start. I mean, I was just going to probably think, like, let's go through some of the early bosses. They were pretty quick. We give maybe our own experience of how we're doing on them, and then sort of what we saw, and then sort of get into probably the first big one's probably Painsmith we get to talk about. But
Painsmith is the big one to talk about, I think, right now.
Yeah. Yes. So I guess before we do that, like, from a personal experience perspective, how are you guys doing?
We are, you know, 1 of 10 right now. We go back in tonight. We did some pulls on the eye, and then we're like, this is going to be a lot easier if we just go clear Heroic and come back. Mm-hmm. And so we're finishing up Heroic and then going to go back, finishing up Heroic and then going back to finish off the eye. And then the 9 is apparently a complete pushover from everything that I've seen, you know, a 3-pull boss kind of thing.
I wish that could.
That's, you know, where I expect to be at the end of the night.
Awesome.
But since we do raid tonight, you know, we're not all there yet. But yeah, the eye, much harder than is typical for a boss in its position in the raid, where, like, we're going in with, you know, pretty good eye level for it. And it still does have a very decent damage check in the intermission phases, which is kind of surprising. The other team in my guild, the weekday team, did the limit strat where you like have a bunch of ranged in the middle and they cleave the both. We're doing the echo strat where you like have the entire raid on one side and they use the harpoons to go to the other side and kill that one. And you get them both to like, you know, 15% and then you finish them off at the same time, which has a lower DPS check. So that's just not the kind of thing you have to usually think about for the second boss in the instance.
Yeah. We're doing the BD or the BD. I don't know if it's BDDG, but nerfed killed it this way, which is like we swap in the middle. We take 4 or 5 stacks on one side, and then everybody swaps the other side.
Yes, that's what we're doing. Yeah.
So it's or not everybody. Sorry, we split our raid in two, and then like one team.
Oh, gets the so 4 you 5 go stacks, like,
and then like
yeah, and you literally
yeah, 10 and 10, yeah, on each side, yeah.
Interesting.
And everybody swaps, even the tanks, which caused a couple wipes, but.
Yeah.
It's very, as a healer, it's not fun because where we swap is right after or right before the second AoE.
Right. So you're like, moving. And then
so we're moving, have five stacks, have to get there and then top everybody, take the hit and then top everybody again while the five stacks are running out.
Yeah.
So it's not fun. We ended up killing it that way. And I think it's basically just because from a healing perspective, we made a couple of adjustments and like our ultimately people just played better. They didn't drop pools in the middle. They didn't die to stupid things. So
yeah, we had I think actually like relatively close to a kill of the eye, but it was one of those things where like it could have taken us one more pull because we were getting deeply into intermission two, but with the way we're doing it, we don't want to use CDs during that. Like raids, yeah, healer CDs, yeah, we want to use, but DPS CDs we don't. So it was like unclear if it was something where we were going to survive the initial immediate extermination with where our damage was, or if we needed to go and do heroic and then come back and then like push out of the intermission like 1 to 2 stacks earlier.
Gotcha.
So we ultimately did go to heroic, but yeah. Also,
yeah, extermination is not fun.
Yeah, we have 3 boomkin. They are all going to press all their CDs during Bloodlust and do 30k DPS for 10 seconds. And
I wish we had 3.
The boss is going to die very quickly. I'm expecting us to get to like 5 stacks of immediate extermination.
Gotcha. Interesting. Nice. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And then we did do a couple pulls on the 9, probably like 10 ish or so, I want to say.
Hey,
that boss. What?
How many pulls did the Terrigru take you, out of curiosity?
One. We one-shot it, actually. Nice. Or we might have wiped once. So, like, one or two. Yeah. Like,
we spent 5 pulls on it because it turns out that if nobody's picking defensive powers, the boss actually will kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. We made it a point. Like, I think, like, it's either me or the paladin that we have in our guild always got the soak one, like the stun immune one.
Right. So people prioritizing the one that removes debuffs and the stun immune one. But then beyond that, people were doing whatever they wanted and by and large ignoring the defensive powers. And the dot that he puts out is actually like a pretty heavy dot and it will kill people. So when they're taking things that increase their damage but don't do anything for their survivability, then, you know, maybe they've taken some stacks of the magic damage increase or they've got the fire dot on them, they can die, turns out. So we went out and had a few people refresh their powers. So we went from like 2 unstable forms to 5. So we had more people to soak the fire dot.
Oh, nice.
And people picked some more defensive powers and then we just easily one-shot it. So pro tip, if you're going in on that boss, pick defensive powers. Boss doesn't have a damage check. Just pick the defensive powers and it'll be real easy. Just don't die.
Yeah, that boss. Yeah, boss is fun, but yeah, no, I think we had 1 or 2 shot it, and then yeah, we worked on the eye. The eye weirdly seems like the type of fight where like if you can just 6 or 7 heal it, just do it because like it's literally just surviving as long as you can. Like that's all that fight is. So
yeah,
we also had a little bit of trouble with the debuffs.
There's a lot of fights like that this tier actually.
We can actually get into some of the other ones that are like that. Because, yeah, there's
real quick, the 9, we are planning to 6 heal.
Oh, nice.
Because it's also, like, just live and the boss will die. Yeah. So, like, just heal through the dot in phase 2. Don't miss the Armageddon soaks. Get the fragments out. And you will eventually kill the boss. Like, it's basically impossible to actually hit the enrage on that.
Yeah. Yeah, we might actually bring 6. We did most of our pulls with 5 healers just because it's all we technically have.
We have 5 and then a elemental shaman that is comfortable playing restoration. So he's usually our 6th player.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So I think, I mean, other than those first 3, they're pretty much a joke. And then sort of the difficulty instance really ramps up. So
yeah.
When I checked last night doing show notes, it was funny. There was actually more kills of, well, in terms of difficulty, it's funny. There's more kills of Mythic than 9. It's like almost 200, I wanted to say, last night.
Yeah.
Then it drops to like 23 for Soul Rend.
Yeah.
In terms of Mythic kills. So it's like huge disparity. There was also more Mythic than 9 kills than there were Heroic Sylvanas kills last night.
I don't know. No surprise there. What yeah. we are planning to do is after we kill the nine, we're going to go back to Heroic Sylvanas because we haven't gotten the AOTC yet.
Neither have we. So,
most guilds haven't. Like you said, there's very few kills. Like if you're not in the world top 100, you probably do not have AOTC Sylvanas.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, but yeah, the difficulty super ramps up from there and ramps up really. It's funny. That's where we get, I think, our first sort of hot fix notes, which was, we'll talk about Soul Render first, which was actually the fifth boss killed. So a lot of guilds killed Remnant first, but to be fair now, Soul Render is probably the easier fourth boss.
Because they reduced his HP by 17% or something?
Reduced it by 17% and then changed the way the AoE damage worked in terms of his tick, his dot tick, reduced that, I think, by almost 40%, I want to say.
Yeah.
Well, I forget the final numbers. They basically reduced it and then also... But reduced it and then also increased its tick rate. So there were the ticks themselves are not as strong,
but there's
they just
more
happen more frequently.
That's
and then
the second time this expansion they've done something like that. The other time, in fairness, was to a DPS potion, Potion of Phantom Fire, was in 9.0, very low proc rate, but very high damage when it proc'd, which led to like huge damage swings. Because if you got 8 procs, you were a god, but if you got 2. You know, it sucked, or one, or in some cases, like we have logs where people hit a potion and they just never got a proc.
God.
But now it has a much higher proc rate and each proc has less damage, so it's much more lower variance.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they also lowered the damage on the chain breaks by like 18 or 17% too. So general, the damage output from that fight was nerfed heavily.
Yeah.
Basically as Limit was progressing it. I think Limit...
They had gone to do like heroic splits or something and then came back to it once they nerfed it.
Yeah. So now fourth boss there, huge swing in sort of difficulty just based on those couple of changes. Now your fourth boss, it's killed. Still looks like a fun fight. I think the additional add is pretty cool in terms of like what it does. So I think it has the Inspire effect, right? So the idea is you want to...
Yeah, kind of. So... Yeah. There's two important things. One, it spawns after the other adds. Two, it doesn't break CC that's already on the other adds. So the way that Limit was doing it is you just CC the other four, burn down the Overlord, and then you do your grips and AoE damage on the other four. And so it's like not super complicated to do that. You do need to have people careful not to dot the adds before they get, you know, CC'd. But there's so much CC in the game that works on them, you know, Hex works, Poly works, you're not damaging them before, so Poly is perfectly fine. Paralysis, of course, the Monks are very good at it. Ring of Peace, also very good on that fight.
Yes. Yeah, so, other than the additional add, not too many different changes from Mythic, but, or from Heroic to Mythic. But generally a very easy boss fight now, just based on the large nerfs that they ended up putting in.
So. I am no longer gonna call bosses easy because we were talking about like the eye before
Attachment
Live, and then the eye turned out to be a lot harder than anybody expected.
Yeah, and I think in general the bosses this tier are just they feel more difficult just in across the board. I think
and so
even Terrigur, I mean, as a first boss is cool, but like you still can't just walk in there and lust and kill it. So.
It is very interesting. I feel like some of these bosses were maybe tuned around having domination sets, post buffs, basically. Because if the whole raid has an extra 15% damage from getting their unholy set, right, at like rank 3, it's the eye is suddenly no longer a damage check whatsoever.
Right. Yeah.
It's a huge nerf to the fight. Same with Soul Render, like that 17% HP nerf. Not quite made up for by domination sets, but pretty close. We saw that as well on Painsmith a little bit, where Painsmith's also tuned fairly high, although Painsmith has other issues that we will talk about in a little bit.
I feel that, which it'll make farm maybe slightly interesting, definitely a little higher in terms of the tuning and difficulty than some of the early Sanctum bosses. So the next boss was Remnant of Ner'zhul, which didn't really go through. I don't think they got any changes to this fight this week. Not that I remember.
I don't think it needs them, honestly.
No.
There's I have not done my mythic prep for this yet. I do know there are some guilds that were doing like the mass dispelling grip one strategy for dealing with malevolence, because the knockbacks actually don't stack in magnitude. It just knocks you back and then knocks you back again and replaces the first one if you get knocked back twice. So you can mass dispel one and have the priest like spam life grip on the one that's farther away, and they'll get gripped back. You can also, I'm like fairly sure there are kills out there where they're just doing the like get knocked to one side, get knocked back to the other. That one's got a different kind of execution challenge where it's like more distributed across the raid as opposed to just like the priest has to do this exactly right or someone dies.
So it's definitely, from a difficulty perspective, I think the biggest thing is just that it's a lot more damage, a lot more swirlies drop. And then there's something with the orbs. I forget what it is. But if the orb damage while they're out is much higher. So it's really just like a more difficult execution.
I think you get more orbs, because like on heroic, you do eventually get double orb spawns, but it's like 3/4 of the way through the fight. You're going to start getting double orb spawns on Mythic Ner'zhul like almost instantly, which of course like doubles the damage you take from them, right?
Right, yeah, and there's also like his helmet, I think it is, when you break part of his armor off, becomes active and starts doing the tank frontals too, or like
That's super dangerous. You got to be careful about, you know, not doing the knockback in the middle of that, because if you do and you hit the entire raid with the double tank frontal, they will die.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so there's all that. I know that like that definitely probably becomes the fifth boss you kill. It is a step up, I think, from Soul Render, just in terms of difficulty and sort of execution.
Yeah.
There's also a space issue too, I forgot. Whenever you dispel, do the dispels, I think the individuals leave puddles. So it ended up being a space issue. But yeah, I mean, I think Limit and Echo both spent, you know, more time here than they did on Soul Render, at least post nerf Soul Render. And yeah, a lot of guilds went to Soul Render first as their fourth kill. So
yeah.
Result seems fun. The bounce mechanic's cool. I like the dispel timing.
Yeah.
I'm still nervous, like, for that, for like world first kill is not an issue. For my guild, it's gonna be like, please just go to the right spot. Like, for the love of God, walk where you need to walk. Whoever gets a debuff, please do that, and then I will dispel you. And then I always have to watch my shaman, who loves to dispel the minute a debuff goes out. So we'll probably ask him to take dispel off his bars.
it's gonna be very interesting. I do think this is going to be another boss that benefits a lot from, you know, getting domination set bonuses, basically, because the space constraints from the malevolence puddle are going to be much less constraining with an extra 10 to 15% raid DPS in a week or two. So that's going to be something where, like, right now the guilds that are killing it might need to do the double dispel in order to manage the puddles, basically. Whereas in 2 weeks, we're just going to kill it quickly enough that it's not a problem.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is true. Well, cool. So then we go from there to probably the second hardest boss in the instance at this point.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Which is Painsmith, where, you know, both Limit, Echo, pretty much everyone has spent outside of Sylvanas the most time on.
Yeah.
Because it's actually
insane.
Crazy. From an intermission perspective. So just to give you, to lay the land, like with Painsmith, right, everything still happens pretty regularly. He still throws his weapons out. You still get the knockout chains. You still got to kill the spike balls that roll out. The one difference there is that whenever he throws his weapon and does that ability, anyone with the spinny chains on them also shoots out spikes basically in a cross pattern from them. So north, south, east, west, so you have to sort of make sure they stand in a particular area to not hit the raid with that. That's fairly simple to do just based on like markers and things like that on the ground. The spikes also one shot if they hit you.
Yes.
So that's a big thing along with the spike balls. And the spikes one shotting is a huge thing when we talk about the intermission, which is just on crack, it feels like. So
yeah. So there's two main changes, right? That I'm aware of, at least. One is that there is a ball wave that got hot fixed into the boss on Tuesday.
Yeah.
This is before any guild had pulled it, of course. But Tuesday, as the raid was unlocking, we got a hotfix that added a wave of spiked balls to the intermission. And the way it works in actuality is that this spike ball wave actually has, it always moves like perpendicular to to this the spike waves that are coming towards you in the intermission, and there's always gaps. It's every other space is open. So you don't have to kill the balls. It's just an extra thing to dodge while you dodge the traps. The other thing, which I think is honestly unforgivable, I think this is... I'm curious to hear what you think about. Well, I think this is the dumbest shit they've done in the boss in a long time. There is a wave of spikes in the intermission that has no gaps.
Yep.
So most people are probably... familiar at this point with phase one or phase two and three of Painsmith, where you've got a wave of spikes coming towards you, and the way you deal with it, it also has no gaps. The way you deal with it is you plant next to it, wait for the spikes to come up, and as soon as they, you know, hit the apex of their movement, you just move into that square. And that is plenty of time for you to get across it and not get hit. And that's fine. The spikes in the intermission move faster. You cannot do that. You will die. Even on heroic, you'll get hit. You might not die, but you will at least get hit and get stunned by the spikes. So on mythic, again, with no gap in the spikes, there is no way to get across outside of movement abilities or warlock gateways placed on the very edge of the platform.
Not anymore.
Oh, not anymore. Right, there's a hotfix.
They did make a hotfix. So yeah, so you're right. Previously, if you warlock gated over the spikes, you could get hit by them.
Yes.
So they did make a hotfix change there where if you're inside the warlock gate flying, you won't get hit by any of the spikes on the ground, which I think previous, if they did not make that change, I would agree with you that that this is sort of a ridiculous mechanic. You basically require people to have some sort of blink-like ability. Yeah, whether that's actual blink, Dora Shadows, the Night Fae, Soul Shape right. One. Or some sort of immunity like Bop, Turtle worked, you know, the Shield of the Paladin bubble, you know,
yeah.
Things like that would also like, work.
So the original version of this fight, the comp requirement for the intermission is ridiculous.
So
like,
good.
I would not want to be, you know, trying to put together comps for our guild and be like, okay, we have to make sure that every single person in the raid has a... immunity or movement ability. It can cross the spikes because things like heroic leap would not work. That will not get you across the spikes in one piece consistently. So it has to be an actual blink. So we're looking at like, okay, who's Night Fae, who's Venthyr? You know, mages are automatically good because they are Night Fae, have a blink themselves and an immunity, so they're like triple good. But yeah. Then there's other classes, like Monk is fine because we've got Transcendence. But then what does a Shaman do?
Goblin.
Goblin doesn't work consistently.
If you jump off the edge, turn around and jump back on, you can do it.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'll maybe do that a couple times to limit. But yeah,
Hunter can do the same thing, jump off, disengage back on.
Yep.
But that's the kind of thing where, like, it's such an insane requirement for a...
Oh, yeah.
It's not even like, you know, the most infamous one that people are familiar with, I think, is Blast Furnace, which I didn't do the boss, and I'm still familiar with it, where you had to have a priest, specifically a priest, to do a mind control. But you only needed one, as long as they didn't die. You needed one. They had to be there. But, you know, if you got to the boss later... you could have someone's trash priest alt come in there because all they needed to do is mind control. The other 19 people could do the rest of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you also had that requirement even last tier. Like, you had N'Zoth with the immunity requirement.
That was also fairly egregious, but, like, not as egregious as this, I don't think.
I think the only reason you're saying, like, so my point would be the only reason that N'Zoth was okay is that the classes that had immunities were good. If mages were not good, or you had to bring,
you also needed fewer.
That's true.
You need a lot of immunities for Guardian, for the way people are doing it right now, and that's not as problematic. The other thing as well is that the timers on N'Zoth, for example, are very static. So you could map out exactly like, okay, we use these three immunities here, these three here, these three here, these three here, and it will always work. With Painsmith, the timing between intermissions depends on how quickly you damage the boss.
Yeah, that's true.
So, for example, if you only have a certain number of bops that you're using to cross the spike wave, you just have to hold DPS until they are off of cooldown so that you can do it again.
That is true. Yeah, no, I'm on your side in terms of
done the hotfix, though, I think it's a lot less bad. Like, yeah, the hotfix makes it a lot more reasonable.
Now you just need one warlock, right?
Need and a warlock, which, let's be honest, you've needed a warlock in your raid for a long time.
Yeah, and they've been fine. I think Blizzard, a lot of people point to maybe a couple years ago when they were like, bring the player, not the class, or, you know, even when 10-man raiding was a thing, they made a couple of statements about how they can't expect raid teams to have certain classes in their raid, right? Because of those things. I think with this being Mythic, being one raid size, expecting you to have a certain class is fine.
Yes, so like, I agree.
Expecting to have a warlock, fine requirement. I'm okay with it.
Straight up, if you're trying to do CE raiding and you don't have a warlock, you need to stop, and either someone needs to reroll to a warlock or you need to recruit one. Because not like raiding without health stones or summoning portals is honestly throwing.
Yeah, it's awful. Painsmith in general, like, not so we're just talking about the intermission, which is the craziest part, but even beyond that, like, the requirements in the actual phases, like the positioning requirements about like how you move through balls, where you need to go, where the safe spots are, because again, like, the fact that people still get those chains around them. Whenever the tank mechanic goes out, they still do the perpendicular spikes everywhere. Like, there's still a lot of other stuff going on. There's still the traps are still there. So I think in terms of like difficulty, a lot of people are sort of comparing this to the boss from HFC,
Gorfiend,
as sort of the wall, right? The mid-tier wall, which I think in terms of like the pacing from an instance, I actually like that more. Like, I'm not a huge, like, the fact that there's like a linear curve, which I mean, I think Sanctum had this for the most part of like a very linear curve.
Nathria, you mean?
Or sorry, Nathria. Sorry, yeah. Nathria had this in terms of a very linear curve, which was like, it was okay, but it's one of those things where you're just like, well, this boss is going to be 50 pulls, next boss 75, next boss 100. And it's sort of like a slow grind up where like, I'm fine if it's like hard, peak, next two, easy, get the time off, get some more gear, and then like the final push for like maybe the final three is sort of the mountain climb. Like, I think in terms of difficulty, I much prefer that than like the slow climb. So in terms of the fight being hard, I'm okay with. Why it's hard though, I'm not really excited about this.
This is another fight as well where actually latency is a really big factor. Because of how precise the timing is for crossing spikes outside of the intermission. Where Limit actually dealt quite a bit with people being desynced or just having slightly jittery latency and just getting one shot to spikes. And like, you can only have that happen so many times before it's just a wipe because you can't do the fight with two people dead.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have a DK that's going to have this issue. Like, he, for whatever reason, he, any sort of moving thing in an instance desyncs for him. So he couldn't do Talik with us.
Oh man.
Because, or not that he couldn't do it, it was just he died every attempt because the elevator would desync. So he would basically, on his screen, he'd be like this high in the air, but the actual elevator was about to hit the ground. So he'd be like, all of a sudden it would just despawn and he'd fall to his death. And he'd have to like pre-move lasers because like he didn't know where he was actually, his player position versus client.
That's awful. Yeah.
Yeah, he sees it even like the elevators in Sanctum today. Like, he has problems with like,
I have walk on the elevators in not actually in Sanctum, but I've had them in multiple previous raids where my elevator position is different from everyone else's.
Yeah.
Nylotha was very bad about that for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's nervous about doing Painsmith with us just because, like, he'll even see it now where, like, he'll be like, he'll show clips and he'll be like, I was literally two squares away from the spike wall and it killed me. He's like, I don't know where I can stand and not die. So,
yeah.
He's like, I can just not do any damage and live, but. You know, that doesn't particularly help.
Yeah,
too much,
so I'm not looking forward to that aspect of the boss because we are going to end up with people, or we are almost certainly going to end up with people that are in that exact same position.
Yeah.
It is also kind of funny that EU actually had an advantage there because internet in the EU is so consistently better than in the United States that they all had lower, more consistent latency to the EU server they were playing on. Than people in the United States, even people playing from the like Limit, you know, Enclave or wherever they are.
Yeah, Complexity Gaming Complex, whatever it is, GameStop Performance Center. So I mean, that'll be another issue with this boss, but I think it's ultimately like, I'm still excited about it being so hard. I'm still excited that being hard in the middle of an instance, so you can look forward to it.
So this is the last time we had a boss like this was Mistress Sajin, right? Where like Sajin was like noticeably harder than the next couple after her, and then you know you had Fallen Avatar. Which, you know, I didn't raid Mythic that tier. That is a tier before I started doing CE raiding. So this is going to be the first time for me doing a tier that doesn't have that like linear ramp up in difficulty, which is going to make it very interesting, I think.
Yeah. We'll have to definitely talk about that, because I think, at least in my point of view, it makes the progression easier because you're not doing that whole thing where you farm the first boss enough and then it's just extending until you kill the last guy. Because like the incremental gear you get from like killing Sludge Fist for the third or fourth time is like not worth the time it takes to clear the whole instance of that to there, right? But yeah, I mean, it'll hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully it's cool. Hopefully you like it. I don't know. I hope they do more of this. It's the only reason I hope you like it, right? So we can be like, yeah, this is a good idea.
I was actually really not looking forward to Painsmith after doing it on PTR. Like, super not into it. First week heroic, I actually really enjoyed the boss. I think it's a very cool boss. It's got some neat overlaps, but the overlaps were very predictable. And very, so you could, you know, plan it out, know what to do, and then it's really just a very heavy execution fight, which I think is a lot of fun. On Tuesday on Heroic, they changed all the timers, which was super dumb. They also added in something that's supposed to be protection against having traps spawn at the very beginning of the intermission. Mm-hmm. Because if that happens, you just die. You can't break them all in time before the spikes break them for you.
It's annoying. It's
so
awful.
There's two changes that they made, right? The first off, they changed basically the order of when, like, there's this overlap of balls and spikes from the tank that comes out. They changed the order of that, so now like the balls spawn immediately after spikes come out. So the tank has to like adjust their position very slightly to not get hit by the balls. It's very annoying, but fairly minor. That's more of an annoying thing. The other bigger change is that they changed the timing of traps and spikes to, I don't know the best way to do this now. We were having people cross the spikes to drop the traps. On Heroic, our main raid is at the point where we just only get one set of traps per phase. Like phase one, we get none. Phase two and phase three, we get one set. And so that's fairly easy. Turns out if you get a second set of traps in a phase, which you get we got in sales yesterday, the timing on them is slightly different, and the spikes have to be closer so that people can cross them.
So it's not, yeah. So that's, and then if you get a third, because we were in phase three, we ended up getting a third set of traps. You actually don't have enough time to get on the other side of the spikes from the tank.
Yeah.
Because literally the tank mechanic goes off as the spike, or as, sorry, the traps drop.
Yeah.
So we wiped to that once because we were doing our normal, like, all right, go over the traps, and then like, oh my god, I'm next to the spikes.
Yeah.
As my trap is dropping, I can't get over it in time. So I'm not a fan of the new timings. I think it causes more wipe. Like we didn't wipe to this, but we had people with traps like mess up crossing the spikes and then getting hit by them, almost dying.
But so basically, if you have good raid DPS and your DPS stay alive, I do think it actually ended up being easier. Once you know the like get over the spikes, because as long as you don't get that second trap wave in the face, it's totally fine. But once you get to the second or the third, it's very screwed up. And also there's an extra fun thing. So I mentioned the protection so you don't get spikes or traps spawning in the middle or at the start of the intermission. So once the boss hits, you know, the boss transitions to the intermission at 70% and 40%. Once you hit 72% and 42%, traps won't spawn anymore, except if the boss has the traps queued up while he's casting something else like a tank mechanic, a long cast, and you push him below 40%, for example, during the cast, he will cast traps.
He still does it. Oh,
he
God.
Still does it. We wiped three times to that before we just like, because we were trying to beat it. Like we had people dead. So we're like, okay, we're just going to try and beat it. And it turns out that like we didn't have to just push our phase two timer down by like 5 seconds. We need to do it by like 20 seconds. So that we would entirely skip the tank mechanic in order to actually push past it. So, you know, more gear, we'll do it. Right now, what we had to do is just stop DPS. so oh, that Jesus. Because it was so funny, we had to stop DPS. We were planning to wait for the traps to come out, so we stopped. He did the tank mechanic. Nothing happened. He just didn't do the traps.
Yeah.
And then we just pushed him, and it was fine.
Gosh.
So that's annoying. I've got a weak aura now that tells me how long it's going to be until we hit that threshold, so I know whether to call a push or a stop. Fun, yeah, yeah. Fun.
Yeah, that does not sound fun at all. I'll be completely honest with you. That sounds rough. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, Painsmith seems like a fun time. I think playing Monk will be fun on it. So like the movement and stuff will be cool.
Can't wait to roll off the edge on Mythic. I've already done it on Heroic.
I have not rolled off yet, but I have been close. I've definitely done the thing where I...
Our second pull ever, I was running out to drop off the tank mechanic, and I rolled, and I got a little lag spike, and I just kept rolling. You know how that goes?
Yeah.
And so that, of course, didn't just kill me, because I was running out the tank mechanic, and the way it works now is if you're off the edge when the tank mechanic lands, it hits the entire platform with spikes.
Oh, okay.
So you can't, like, on the first PTR, people were, like, jumping off and then transcending back on so that there were no spikes.
Oh, wow.
Don't do that. But also, be very careful rolling with the tank mechanic, because if you go off, the raid dies.
That's crazy. Yeah, I will not... Well, I'm not going to tank this tier. I'll keep that in mind. But yeah, that sounds... Yeah, sounds not good.
But that's more of just, like... That was very funny, because it was our second pull ever, and I have the clip showing that I did roll too far. Like, I rolled farther than roll is supposed to go, but it was...
Yeah, I did the thing where, like, I instinctively, whenever I roll, I jump right at the end. So I did the whole, like, roll, jump right at the end, and, like, almost just jump straight off, because I saw that forward momentum. But I've not rolled off just yet, so...
Yeah, I guess to wrap up the Painsmith discussion, I don't know what I expect from this boss anymore. This is part of the reason I was talking before the stream, like, this tier, this race, has defied all expectations. Between last week, Heroic Sylvanas being so hard, this week, Eye of the Jailer unexpectedly being, you know, quite a DPS check, Painsmith just coming out of nowhere and smashing people. And then... They got to Guardian of the first three. Ones. And what was it? 7 pulls for Echo?
7 for them. 20-ish for Limit.
And then...
it was 6 healed. The Patchwork fight was 6 healed.
Yeah. They 6 healed it. They used Immunes to soak the Obliterates. And the reason that they 6 healed a Patchwork fight is because the Enrage actually depends on... how many purging protocol casts that go off. You basically get, is it 3 sets of them before the final phase? And if you bring more healers, you can do more purging protocol casts, which works out in this case to an extra about 30 seconds of DPS on the boss. And so that, it turns out, is worth bringing a 6th healer in a 3rd Holy Paladin.
I think it particularly means you can bring a 3rd Holy Paladin versus an actual any 6th healer. Yeah.
They also had, I don't know if you were watching the healing meters, they had a Protection Paladin, of course, on the fight, pressing lots of Wogs very briefly, rank 1 HPS on the fight.
Yeah.
Up until the first raid damage event went out. That was fun. And then, of course, the either Brewmaster or Blood DK, depending on what guild, tanks the fight for, or tanks the boss for the majority of the fight, and the prop paladin just does damage and healing, and then does the tank mechanic.
Yeah, or you could be BDGG and solo
tank it with a prop paladin. Lincoln is gonna have my head for saying that prop paladin was gonna be too squishy, because that's nuts. That boss hits so hard that we actually, so normally for SimC, the default enemy is based on the hardest hitting boss in the raid, but Guardian hits so much harder than anything else. Like, he's literally double the auto attack damage of the next highest boss.
That's funny.
So we're actually changing it so it doesn't hit as hard, because it's making Brewmaster Sims bad, because it's putting too much damage into Invoke Niazao.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's that fight push. I mean, I'm not going to say pushover. I think it needs a very, right now in the current gear, needs a very specific actually healing composition, right? Like, you can't do this fight with any healers. Like, I think it's got to be multiple Holy Paladins and multiple Disc Priests to make it work, just to make the damage check, right?
Yeah, I think Limit did two Disc, three Holy Paladin, and a Resto Shaman. I think that are three Disc and two Holy Paladins and the Resto Shaman. But it, they had the one Resto Shaman in there. BDGG, the absolute mad lads. One tank, five healers.
Yeah.
Crazy. And of course, this is another boss where when we have the Sanctum of Domination sets, we're not going to need to six heal this boss because we can... Basically, the extra raid damage from that is going to mean that bringing an extra DPS and just doing one fewer purging protocol in each set is going to be the way to go.
Yeah. You'll be able... Instead of doing... I think most of... They all did, what, four each? Four protocols?
So they did... They had three casts go off and brought it in during the four.
Okay, yeah. So you'll be able to just take two hits and then be fine across the board, yeah. Which the first hit generally isn't deadly. It's always going to be the second one. So, I mean, you only need cooldowns for the second hits, which will be nice. But yeah, so that's Guardian. Not much to say. Really fell over. And then you get to Fate Scribe, which started a little... This is, I think, the only boss that has generated any sort of drama. But yeah, so Fate Scribe...
Are you sure about that? Because we haven't hit KT yet.
That's true. We got to talk about KT. But I think... Fate Scribe, of course, is the rune boss. The mythic mechanic, just to sort of talk about this, is like in whenever you activate one of the runes to run them around the room, there is now a beam that goes from wherever the rune is to the center. So it basically sort of cuts off and moves as you move the rune. So it's basically meant to be like you have to sort of maybe stop one rune, let another rune cross over, run around, and then get that rune back, like moving the next rune, whatever it ends up being. And you got to make them go counterclockwise, clockwise, all this stuff. Super, super complicated. Unless you're Limit and you just say, we'll just make them all go left.
Yeah.
Take one person. They'll all go left. There's plenty of time for this to happen.
Heroic too, by the way. And I think is honestly probably the easier strategy for Heroic. Because one of the things that wiped us a bunch on Fate Scribe is people being like, oh, it's slightly closer to go counterclockwise. I need to call for a backup. And by the time the backup actually gets there, you could have just gone the other way and gotten there faster. So it turns out that there's virtually nowhere that it can spawn that it's impossible to go clockwise around.
Yeah.
You have enough time as long as you get there right as it turns out.
Right. But that only works up to the final phase. So because the only reason is the final phase is a shorter timer before the explosion goes off. But yeah, any of the intermission phases, just jump on one person each ring, have them run around. So there was a fun little tweet, couple little tweets back and forth between the Echo and Limit guys. Old Echo Lorgok, a little upset at how simple this was. But I mean, I think Limit killed it sub 30-ish, or no, it was like a 60-ish pull boss, I think, at the end of the day. Or no, that was KT. It was super low from a pull count perspective. I think Echo killed it in 12, I want to say, or something ridiculously low after they saw Limit do it. So
yeah,
I mean, this boss had potential, I think, to be really interesting. Just go left. The other thing too is, I don't know if you noticed this, but when Limit did it in the final phase, they didn't care about the beams because there wasn't the intermission damage going off.
You could just have people
run through the beams because the damage wasn't high enough and just heal them. So when they killed it, they were just like, just run quickest way, get it done. Don't care about beams. Go through them. You'll have a healer, like a paladin or something was healing them. So,
yeah, we wiped a bunch on Fate Scribe last week to the intermission ones from people trying to overthink the intermission rings. I think it is going to be a lot easier for a typical guild to just simplify the mechanic as much as possible and rely on people getting there quickly. Because honestly, we actually had people get to their runes very quickly, very consistently. It's just that they would then like sit there waiting for backup, right? Yeah. And if you just never call for backup in the intermission, just never do it. Always just get on your rune and go. There are going to be sometimes maybe that someone gets there too slow, the rune is too far, and you just die. But I think for the most part, it's going to be the better strategy for most guilds.
Yeah. Yeah, so it makes it definitely definitely fun, I'll say. That was sort of Fate Scribe. And again, you're going to hear a theme here. Disappointing, I think, in terms of like they could have shortened the timer in the intermission. so you had to go the opposite direction, make it a little bit more interesting there.
Which I think, I think for Limit and Echo, they could have done that. I think for the rest of the world, you know, anybody outside the top 10, that just makes the boss such a wall. Because the thing that the top 10 guilds have that, you know, my, you know, world rank 400 something guild doesn't have is extremely good coordination in fight. Like, we plan things out, but when we have the dynamic mechanics like that assign people for us, having the, unless there's a weak aura that does all the assignments for you and figures it all out, right? It's very difficult for us to consistently execute those high coordination mechanics. And it would be doable, but our pull count would be much higher than it would be for Limit and Echo as compared to something like Guardian, where when we get to Guardian, we might not do it in 7 pulls, but it's not going to be 100 pulls, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, I think, yeah, I get the coordination aspect of it. I think it just ends up being a slightly less, slightly harder version of its heroic fight, right? Which so it just does a little bit more damage.
There's a lot of speculation that they are going to hotfix some of these bosses to make you do the mechanics the intended way, because so many of these bosses later on in the instance, we'll get to KT in a second, because that's one too, where they just people just ignored mechanics, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to do that?
Do I think they're going to do that? No. I mean,
I agree with that. I don't think they will.
I don't. I think they just take the L on it, right? Like, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think to change it now just basically makes the fight different. Like, in the only instance I actually can think of this happening, well, not only instance, but the most recent one was Council of Blood, where when Limit killed it, any guild who killed it the first week, the jump mechanic, I forget the name of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Dancing Recital, Fever. Or Fever, yeah. Wasn't triggering correctly in week one of Mythic. So like there are some times where you got one fever and other times where you got, you know, the three or four you're supposed to get, right?
Yeah.
So they hotfix that to be more consistent, which I think is fine because like it happened a couple of times. But I think for something like this where like you set the mechanic, you set the numbers, like I don't think they change it. And I think that if they do, it just, the best skills in the world have already killed it. So now you're making them week two kill a harder version of the same boss and you're sort of making everybody else kill a harder version of the boss. Like, no offense, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want you to hot fix it once, then to just in like 3 or 4 months when you go through your nerfs to hot fix it again to bring it back to what the first guild whoever killed it, you know, the version they killed it as. So,
The one boss I actually could see them hot fix buffing basically would be KT. Because KT got cheesed. Oh man. So, this is something, it worked on PTR, and we bug reported during PTR testing, but didn't get fixed. If the tank dies when they get hit by the tank mechanic, the adds despawn.
Right.
But
right.
You combine that with the Fate Scribe cheat death trinket, which, in contrast to regular cheat deaths, actually kills you, which usually is a downside, because you lose threat, and that's not great.
Right.
But if you're a DPS that taunted the boss for the tank mechanic with the cheat death trinket on, died so that they would despawn, and then used the cheat death trinket to revive yourself, everything's great, losing threats and upside.
Yeah. Yeah, which is just, it's so funny that people, like, this the actual cheat death on this trinket sucks. As a tank trinket, like, as a tank cheat death, it's awful. But in this specific instance, it's like one of the best trinkets that could have ever come out of the raid. And it's hilarious that it's on the boss right before.
Yeah. It's like, you know, this happened especially in a lot of older games where, you know, you're getting to a boss room because there's a lot of ammo and you get the super powerful weapon to use on the boss and all that stuff immediately before it. And it's like unintentionally evoking that right here where like the Fate Scribe trinket is just the best thing in the world for this.
Yeah. It just pops out like, hey, you'll need me to kill this boss. Like the hookshot or like whatever ends up the boomerang in Zelda. You're like, yo, you're definitely going to need this to kill the boss.
Yeah.
Which I just find hilarious. But yeah, I mean, KT, what a, as a penultimate boss, I don't know. I mean, we can sort of talk about this maybe a little bit, but as a penultimate boss, it's bad. And I think it's bad, not only because of this cheese, but I think they missed the mark across the board in terms of like DPS and just damage going out, right? like because of the way the timings work.
I guess you're actually about to get to that, but there's a thing you can do where you basically make him skip a cast of the group damage soak, which does a lot of damage. It's very dangerous, and so skipping it is very valuable. Basically, you just push the boss at times that make him not cast it one time. And so because you push him, what, three times over the course of the fight, you skip three casts of this very high damage ability. And I don't know that that necessarily fixes it, but it does add a lot, especially as well, like, if people also had to be killing the tank adds, then, you know, the damage requirement from the DPS goes up. Then there's also things like they were stacking, which this is a heroic strat as well, but you stack the Oblivion's Echoes in the center, the back center of the room, basically, and just everybody, instead of using them to silence the tank adds, so then all of those adds spawn there, and you just have like a frost mage throw a frost orb on them that keeps them slowed while Starfall just kills them for you. Hashtag three boomkin club. Like, it's just gonna be a non-mechanic for us. And so because I think the tank stuff despawning and the push timer shenanigans really undercut this boss, because it just does so much to reduce the damage requirement and reduce the healing requirement.
Well, and the biggest thing with the healing requirement is because you can push up the boss under 5% and essentially reset a lot of the timers, right? Stopping the cast of the group wide damage, and then also it resets the timers on like shards and some other abilities too. Because I think they did that so you didn't get bad overlaps going into it, which is a smart way to do it, but you could cheese it. Is that for the spikes that spawn, which do probably outside of the soak mechanic, do the largest amount of raid wide damage, you can kill them all at the same time under every defensive cooldown you have, hold the boss under 5% for enough time. So you
skip the next. Yeah.
Well, no, you know, not that you skip it. You hold it there under 5% so that you let your cooldowns reset. So the next time you go through the next phase one piece, all your raid wide defensives are back up and you just do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like that's the actual worst part, is that they did something that they didn't do at Zakul either. Zakul is actually another example of this with the dispels you had to do.
Yeah.
That when you dispel would do raid wide damage. The problem is you could just under cooldowns mass it and it didn't do enough damage. Here's the very similar way is not only do they not do enough damage to kill you if you pop all five or six at the same time, you also are cheese the timers enough where like you only get one spikes a phase and you have all your defensive ups each time because you can elongate that second half of the phase.
Yeah. I am curious, would you rather this be an SLG style like random impossible overlaps because of push timers kind of thing?
No, I would wanted them to modify the ability, right? Make the dock hit harder.
I think that's fair.
Like from a heal, like if I look at this from a healing fight perspective, the soak, being able to push fast and miss a soak mechanic, I'm fine. Like, I think that's fair. Like, I'm fine with the way that the actual timers worked out and the fact that you could hold the boss under 5% for like an extra 10, 15 seconds so that next time you go through it, you have more time, right? Basically elongating that and killing it or phasing it at the last possible second. And I'm fine that the timers reset when he's at low health, because I think getting like a soak mechanic right as you're supposed to go into the intermission is really a bad terrible overlap. Yeah. So I'm fine with that. I think the problem is that the abilities that are supposed to do damage don't do enough damage, right? Like the spikes are supposed to be dangerous. And if you can just put the spikes with the little adds that spawn and AoE everything together, because then you get better damage, like distribution, right? You kill little adds plus spikes plus sitting under cooldowns. It's like at that point, it's like every 3 minute hit your raid wides.
Yeah. So I'm curious, maybe a fix to it would have been having ramping damage during phase one, so that if you just sat there with the boss below 5% waiting for your timers to line up, you would have eventually just died. So you needed to push the boss. You know, maybe something like that would have been ideal. So that
give him like an aura.
Yeah.
Yeah, give him like an aura where like under 5% you had to basically push. But at that point,
or even just like, you know, during phase one, he just periodically like gains a stacking aura that is just doing more and more damage. And A, that makes Rested Druid and Mistweaver better.
Yep.
B, that means that you can't just sit there below 5%, because sitting there below 5%, you know, means you've got this huge ticking raid damage going out.
Right. Yeah.
And you really are pressuring your healers in a different way than that also wants cooldowns. So then I don't know that that's the right solution, but it's, you know, there are ways they could approach this that don't necessarily put us in SLG territory. That do make the fight, basically cut off these cheeses. But also, this is with kind of post hoc knowledge of how people actually did the fight on live. And I know we did find the tank cheese on PTR and did report it, and it didn't get fixed. I don't know that anybody was doing the holding CD stuff on PTR. I kind of doubt it with only an hour of PTR time.
Yeah, I mean, like, doing, like, the timing stuff would have been something that was never part of PTR. But, I mean, the damage, like, the dot damage and things like that, like, Blizzard should have been able to see guilds killing a lot of those spikes all at once. Trying to see, like, what a bunch of cooldowns was. Because that's just a number. That's just a math thing. Like, that's
I think they expected that you wouldn't be able to put all five CDs in the same spot every phase. I think that's really ultimately what it was. Because if you have an SLT and a barrier on it, you can do like three. And when you're getting five, that means you actually have to do the mechanic, right? You do your three, then you do two more later. And that is a fairly, like, it's not an unusual mechanic, right? We've had stuff like that before.
Yeah, the pops and stuff that, or like not trying to overlap like dots and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm saying is, like, they could have changed it.
Absolutely.
I mean, even not increasing the initial damage, but making the dot tick harder.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, you could only reasonably survive three dot, like, stacks of the dot before it became unmanageable, right? Yeah. Even in cooldowns and I mean, they could have done a little bit about that, but yeah, I mean, what this is, what, 60 pulls for limit. But they did the majority of those while Echo slept, and then Echo came in and killed it in like sub 20.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, something like that. I have the Warcraft logs thing, Race to World First thing, still open. I can actually check their pull counts, which is very cool. I think that's actually one of the best things, I think, for the raiding community over the past couple of tiers is the rise of stuff like the Race to World First stuff that tells us pull counts of these high-end guilds. And also stuff like, not to like toot my own horn, but the prog stats stuff to tell us what higher-end guilds and even mid-tier guilds are doing for pull counts, I think is very good for setting reasonable expectations for people on like what's the pull counts looking like for this boss. Because Echo killed this maybe in 20 pulls, but you know, then we can look at, you know, what's the number 8 guild doing it, and it's going to be a lot closer to what a typical guild actually does it in.
Right, or you can do comparisons where it's like, if Guardians and KT were killing similar pulls and you just killed Guardians, you can expect similar number of pulls for KT, right?
So Limit killed KT after 71 pulls. Echo killed KT after 22 pulls. And Echo actually got the kill an hour before Limit did. Although this doesn't tell me when they started, right?
It was in the morning. So Echo got it at the start of their day. So Limit had gone to bed. So they killed it, I think, either as Limit was waking up, because they did splits, I think, that day. But they had all the data from like Limit's first day on it. So
yeah, and then like Fatescribe Echo 16 pulls.
Because they just used the Limit strat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is just, it's, yeah. Though, I mean, I will tell you that from my perspective, and I know we're a little bit over, so I don't know if we get too much time to talk about Sylvanas, and she is still alive, unfortunately, as of we're talking about this. But I will say that, like, we talked a little bit about having, like, a mid-tier ramp, and then, like, a little bit lower, and then ramping to the final bosses, right? It's sort of, like, something that I enjoyed, like, from HFC was like that. And, you know, there was you talked about Mistress in Tomb of Sargeras, right? Like, I like those type of instances. The problem is that, like, Fallen Avatar in Tome was not a 20-pull boss. Like, it was a couple hundred, right? And so I think in this case, they missed the mark in tuning after Painsmith. Like, wildly missed the mark. Like,
I think
not just slightly off, like...
I think what they actually did on, like, Guardian. You know, Guardian would have been fine if, for example, on Guardian, he enrages after 6 Purging Protocol casts. So if you let him cast 6 times in a row, even if you have the healing CDs to somehow survive that, he will enrage and he will start one-shotting everything. If that were lower, you know, so you couldn't do, you know, 3 casts, then that would have ruled out this 6 heal strat. I don't know if it would have actually made it harder. It might have still died in 20 pulls or whatever. I think this had the level of flexibility where the top guilds literally just like did the math, figured out the way with the balanced the healing requirement and the damage requirement in such a way that they were like, yeah, this is, we can do this.
Right. Yeah, which to me, like, Guardian seems like the simplest, like, just give him more health or give it more health, right? Like, that's, yeah. Like, you give Guardian a couple million more health, it becomes a, like, five heal, like, tight DPS check where you have everybody doing.
Don't know perfect. If it does, because.
Well, I mean, like, why a number that makes sense.
What if the most efficient way to add more DPS time to the boss is to add a healer with a raid CD, so you can take another purging protocol. Although, I guess you're right, there is a point where you can no longer take another purging protocol, no matter what CDs you have.
Yeah.
So maybe the answer, instead of adding more HP, was to increase the damage of purging protocol, so that on Mythic, you can't take three.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. There's a couple different layers, levers.
So I think you're right.
Those levers wrong. Right?
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think you're right.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, they just got them, they were off, right? And I think that similarly, Fate Scribe falls into another case where they just missed a timer edit, right? Like, that intermission timer is, instead of being, what is it, like 35 seconds right now or something like that, make that 30 seconds and you immediately change the way the boss works.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you immediately have to go the opposite direction. It's not a massive change in terms of actual time. It's just, now you have to contend with going left
actually,
and right.
So I don't know if that actually, because when you're going counterclockwise and some of them are going clockwise, that means you lose some time from, like, having to step off and go around the beam, right? Does that make up
the beam,
for the
increase? The beam didn't kill you. So, like, the idea is, like, okay, at that point, it's more of a, like, you just have to, there's a healing check now on certain people that are about to take a beam.
Okay.
Like, I'm basically on the beam, not one-shotting you, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or they could have done something where, like, the, there could have been other ways to potentially do it. Where, like,
I think, ultimately, though, your point is that they missed elements of tuning these that prevented these kind of cheeses. And
right, yeah.
That's disappointing. Echo has 100 pulls on Sylvanas, and their best pull, Warcraft log shows it at 3.6%, which translates to
about
something like
51 or 52%.
Yeah, something like 55% HP or something like that. No, 51. Yeah, 51. So 51.79 is the exact number. 100 pulls.
Yeah.
Although Denathrius after SLG took, what, 300 pulls? And then Denathrius was like 100 something. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
maybe Painsmith was the real end boss this tier.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to end up potentially. I mean, it's funny too. We talk a little bit about this live, right, with the pull counts. But I think if Limit and Echo got to Denathrius on Saturday versus on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Of that race, I think Denathrius wouldn't have survived.
Yeah.
I think the P3 damage check was tight, but I think it potentially wouldn't have survived the first reset. So
yeah.
And
I think that's what we're gonna see here. I think we're gonna see Limit and Echo both kill Sylvanas probably today, maybe tomorrow. I don't know when Echo stops raiding. Time zones are hard. But I would not be surprised to see kills from both teams between today and tomorrow. And I, for one, after Painsmith, was bracing for this to be like a 2 or 3 week race to world first, because like Painsmith was tuned so high, I was like, oh my god, Guardian's gonna be like a 200 pull boss, and then they're gonna hit KT and that's gonna be like a 300 pull boss, and they're just gonna need more gear in order to do it, and then they kill them in like 20 pulls.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I'm saying, is like the second half of this instance is so disappointing in terms of just like what could have been, because I think it's not that the fights are inherently bad or that the mechanics are bad or they're just unfun to play. I think it's just they missed the mark with the levers they had to tune it, right? Yeah. And like,
which, my personal two cents, I know we're running long, so this will be short, but I actually do like it being tuned a little bit lower than a lot of raids have been in the past in terms of like pull count required. I think this is too low. Like the last three bosses or the penultimate three bosses shouldn't be 20 pull bosses, even for the world first guilds. Maybe like the sixth boss in the instance, whatever, but not the ninth.
It's way too low.
So that I am actually glad, because like when we were looking at Painsmith, I was like, I don't know how we're getting through this tier if Painsmith is 160 pulls for Limit, and the other bosses after that, they've got to be harder, right? Like if they were harder than that, this tier would take us so long to get through.
Or you'd see like you'd end up seeing like massive nerfs sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's where I was initially thinking like they had to have like tuned this entire instance around the entire raid having domination sets or something, because that's gonna just make it like they're just betting on that, making it so much easier for the rest of us that it's okay. But no, like I'm okay with like there being bosses later in the tier that are like, I think it's actually really great if the end boss is like sub 200. Like give me a nice 150 to 180 pulls on a boss like Denathrius. That's a lot of fun to do, and I'm happy. None of this like 300 pulls nonsense.
Yeah, but I can. Yeah,
but like that 20 pulls sense. Not enough.
No, I agree. So I think.
Sorry. On the side note, I do think the KT will be more than 20 pulls for Baldafar guilds, I think it's going to be more like a 50 pull boss for a lot of guilds. Yeah. But still, that's so much lower than any penultimate boss in recent memory, except for maybe Carapace. Although Blockade, I guess, was like that too, wasn't it? Although, BOD had its own problems.
Yeah, with difficulty there was a curve. Lot of other issues with BOD. But yeah, like, I mean, I think...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, that boss was, I think, undertuned also in terms of where it's at, so...
Yeah. I'm actually curious now. I'm going to pull up stats for Nyalotha. What were people's pull counts on Carapace? 42 to 83 is the like, 50... Okay. That's 50% of kills that fall within that range. So that is actually like where I expect KT to fall.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Interesting. Cool. I mean, I think that's our sort of the first week of Mythic. I think it's been fun. Painsmith, probably the only interesting boss. I mean, it's funny. The first half of the instance actually very interesting. Like I'm fine with all the bosses leading up to Painsmith. And then like after Painsmith, my interest sort of just dropped in terms of
I do think it's very funny. That like Limit had more pulls on Soul Render than they had on KT.
Yeah. Then they probably had similar amounts of post nerf Soul Render pulls and KT. Like those were like
Echo, not exactly, because they still ended up with like 70 pulls on KT or something. Yeah. Whereas like post nerf Soul Render, they were like one shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a very, very unpredictable week.
It's very weird tier, very weird tier. So that is for sure.
I think that's going to be the show today. We are running about 10 minutes over, mostly because we spent a lot of time talking about domination sockets. But that is going to be our show for today. Thank you all for listening. This show will be back on this channel next week. There will not be an audio version up right away because Pika's Friday is actually down right now. Fingers crossed it should be back up soon. But the audio version will be up when that's back up. But until then, if you like the show and you want to support it and all the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, including guides and working on Sims and things like that, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And as always, we welcome you to come and join in the different lounge channels in the Peak Discord. Always a great time, although I think Brew Lounge is filled with F1 posting right now, so
it's a good time then.
Maybe not the best time.
Only time Brew Lounge is a good time.
Yep, that's it for today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.